glad you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you. We're glad you're here.
Welcome to Mark and Friends. I'm your host, Donna Leland. And today we're talking with Dawn Kazdasu. She's the author of Trailer Park CEO, 12 Leadership Cornerstones to Become a Godly Woman of Influence from Broad Street Publishing. Thank you so much, Dawn, for joining us here on Mark and Friends.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here and honored to be a part of your community.
So my big question is, start us off and tell us your backstory, because that's where part of that title came from.
Yes, I came from a trailer park in South Louisiana and a rural community. And my book is actually my story and journey of how I overcame the poverty, abuse, and addictions that were so prominent in that trailer park to now be where I am today and serving in executive leadership and the intentionality that went behind that journey and how I got to be right where I am today.
And it was difficult because in your book, you talk about how you had to go out there and clean houses, and you had to help support your family. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, so to take us back even a little bit further, Donna, is that I'm a product of a teenage pregnancy. And so my mom was 15 years old. I turned 16 just 2 weeks before I was born. And so as we know, statistically speaking, teenage pregnancies will lead to poverty and a life of poverty for most people. And so we were a product of that. And so when you were just trying to make ends meet, and we didn't even own our trailer, we lived in a trailer park where we rented the trailer. And so there was not much there financially. And so it took all hands on deck just to survive. And so at a very young age, as soon as I could find things to do, from ironing clothes for neighbors to, you know, cleaning houses to eventually when I was old enough to get a job to go out into the workforce, I was always working to be able to provide for the family. Even though we were on welfare, we were recipients of the food stamps and all, but we still had a lot of bills and it took a lot to navigate those things. And so from a very, very young age, I learned the value of work ethic and how to work and how to provide.
But in the midst of this all, you still got straight A's. How did that happen?
Right. Well, I think that came out, and that's truly a God thing of just giving me a passion for learning. You know, school at first was an escape. It was a way to get out of that trailer park. It was like I could go into that school setting, and it was just so different. Obviously, different backgrounds of the kids that were in my classes, but I would always look at my teachers and just be in awe of what they knew and the knowledge they had, and they became role models for me at a very young age. And so some of my straight A or my desire to achieve and learning came because I wanted to please my teachers. I had that desire to just be that people pleasing desire that sometimes we have. And so some of it was from that, but the other was just, I just craved the knowledge and really wanted to learn about all things from that. So that's came from that passion, really.
Where did your interest in the things of the Lord, how was that developed?
Yeah, well, at a very young age, matter of fact, I was about 7 years old, and I was in a home that was very physically abusive, and I was escaping one day and just wandering the streets, which today, as a parent, just I look back at that time and just so grateful for God's protection, because I literally was wandering streets at the age of 7, and I stumbled, believe it or not, into a church. I walked into a church because it looked safe and there was activity, and I saw kids. I didn't understand what it was, but I saw kids, and I went in there, and I remember sitting in the back of that church and just listening and hearing what was, I guess, going on for that day. And so I was just in awe of just the order that was in place, and I felt peace in that church. And so that was my first introduction, but obviously did not know the Lord then. And then over my life, I believe that God always had his hand on me and was always guiding me. Psalm 119, 105 says that the word is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. And I think God has just been shining this light on my path. And I've just, not always obedient. I mean, I talk about that in the book of times when I've not been obedient, but obedient to just, I was following this light. And that light had led me into other churches. And eventually when I was in junior high, I joined a youth group. That was a pivotal moment for me, because that's when I saw the Christ-like behavior from people, the kindness, the desire to teach you. But I actually did not come to know the Lord personally. I was checking boxes. I was a good person. I was going to the youth groups and church, but I was not in a personal relationship with him until my senior year of college. And it took me being in a college and career small group. And honestly, I was that person that was an altar call on a Sunday when it finally all came in and I surrendered all and decided to turn my life over to Christ. And literally scales off of my eyes were removed because I started seeing things so differently. And it's funny because you think you're good, right? We're doing all of these good things and pleasing things. And then I sat back and I was like, whoa, I am not where God wants me to be. And that led for a whole different world ahead of me, for sure. And a different light on a path.
It's so beautiful just to see God's hand on you throughout your different situations. And you were the first one to graduate from high school and then go on to college. And so you really led the way for your family.
I did. It's just, you know, I still look back at how I was sitting in high school and thinking if I really should even go to college. I knew I was going to graduate high school, but I was just sitting back, and because my dad had passed away my senior year of high school. So lots of changes. Mom becomes single mom, three kids trying to make it. And of course there was no life insurance or any kind of money that was going to be coming in from his death. And took one of my high school teachers was like, you cannot stay in this trailer park. You have to go to college. And that was an escape, you know, at 17, leaving that trailer park and driving off to the university and just scared as all get out of what I was walking into, but then filled with excitement of what the possibilities were. And that was a very exciting time.
And then you went on to do a lot of different things and very interesting things. Tell us about all the permutations of your employment.
Yeah, well, you know, the funniest thing is when I first started my career, graduate from college and start my career, thought I was going to med school. That was the dream. And when that was no longer the dream and I had to alter my plans and go with plan B. And I jokingly say when I speak in audience to audiences, I'll say I became that drug dealer. And so, you know, that drug dealer, because I understood from the trailer hood what drug dealing was like, but it was obviously legalized, went into the pharmaceutical industry. And that was my first big girl job. And I'm talking right into corporate America and talk about the skill sets that I had to learn. I mean, from eating at restaurants, like I didn't know how to eat at a fancy restaurant with doctors and business seminars and all those things. So, you know, those first couple years was just such a skill set learning. Things that you don't learn in college, you don't learn in the educational system. It was life skills that I had to go learn. And so I'm so grateful for that time because it taught me valuable life skills. And then, you know, the Lord called me to leave corporate America and I opened up my own coffee shop. I jokingly say I survived Y2K. We all did. But I, you know, after surviving Y2K, when we thought the world was not going to be the same anymore, I went and opened up a coffee shop, which was scary and exciting at the same time. 25 years old, opened my first coffee shop. A year and a half later, opened my second location. And then went on to write my own franchise agreement, get it approved by the state of Louisiana, and sold 7 franchises. It's like the Hallmark movie in the making. I was like, you know, three kids in tow and opening up these coffee shops. But you know, something happened, and I talk a lot about this. I think we all have this in our lives. Doesn't matter where you came from, but when you come out of humble beginnings and trailer park situations, when sometimes when we step into these big opportunities, we will have what I like to call the imposter syndrome, and that all of a sudden we hear these voices saying that we're not good enough, we're not equipped, we don't have the skill sets, even though we're doing it, we're doing all the things, and we're having success. It's amazing how I think the enemy will use our limiting beliefs and start speaking these voices into us. And unfortunately, I listened to it at that time. And this was I call it one of my failing forward moments in the book as well, because I looked at this and I thought I was not good enough to run my new company that I have created. And so I sold it. And so while I physically left the trailer park, I would mentally go back there if I didn't make some changes. And that's when I started reading books on, okay, what do you do if you've got to money and you want to build wealth and invest? And I'm so grateful that I picked up a book that talked to me about investing in real estate, because that started my real estate journey. And I went in that year, and it was 2008. Gosh, if all our listeners are listening, they know what it felt like in 2008, especially for the real estate market. It was crashing and there were foreclosures everywhere and short sales. And I had an opportunity to buy a foreclosure and start my investment portfolio. And that led to me getting my license. And now here I am, 17 years of being a licensed realtor and in the real estate industry. Opened up my own company, which is called 12 Stones. It's a coaching and speaking and consulting company where I was coaching executive. I am coaching executives in all industries, and it's exciting to be in this role now and navigating all of the things with my agents and growth into this industry as it is.
Right, so the Trailer Park CEO is the first half of the book, and then it's 12 leadership cornerstones to become a godly woman of influence. And so you've taken everything that you've learned, and now you want to transition that into helping other people find a leadership voice, a leadership model. And give us, I know we don't have time to go through all 12, that's why you have a book,
right?
But what are some of the most important aspects of leadership? You say leaders have to have grit.
You know, I start the book off with that because I wanted to build a foundation, because often as we do as leaders and personal growth junkies, right? We want to read all of this and just jump right into action. But the whole chapter on grit talks about like not grinding for the wrong purpose. Matter of fact, it talks how do we find grit on purpose and what does that look like? And now I believe, as a believer, I believe we all have one purpose, and that's we're kingdom builders.
Yeah.
That's the Great Commission. That is our purpose. So people who are trying to find their purpose in life, I'm like, it's already been identified for you.
Yeah.
What we really need to ask is, what is our calling? What are we called to do for that purpose? And that will be based on our gifts and our talents, right? These things that God has given us uniquely that we can now use to build his kingdom. And so, as a personal growth junkie, I was reading all of these books and I was like, but what is the Bible say about these things? Like, this all sounds good, but what does the Bible say? And I knew hard work and I knew grit. I knew how to do that. But I also realized in my life there were times when I was doing that grit work and then I'd have burnout. I would do that grit work and then I'd wake up and like, I don't even like this anymore. Like, why am I doing this? And I would start questioning the things that I was doing, and I would get apathy towards things. And I was like, okay, there's something to this, because if God has called me, I've got to now reframe this. And so I started digging into my own personal behaviors and looking at this, and then saying, okay, what does the Bible say? And I was reading all the verses and digging into the scripture. And then I realized, I was like, wait, when we grit on purpose, meaning that we grit on our calling, what we're called to do, you can't reach apathy. You can't reach burnout. I mean, you could if you do it the wrong way still, but you will wake up every day just filled with that desire to be able to give everything and all your work for the Lord, because now you're on purpose. And so in the book, I wanted to build a foundation that before you do anything, you got to figure out what that calling is. You got to figure out what you're supposed to be doing the grit work on, because you could be doing all that grinding on the wrong thing. And even if you applied all of the other stones, if you're doing the wrong work for the Lord, you're going to burn out. You're going to wake up and question, am I really called to this? And so I spent a whole chapter just talking about that to build a foundation of finding our calling.
That's so good. I was just thinking about this in my own life. You know, why do I lose enthusiasm for certain things? Mm-hmm. And I think because God did not call me to that, you know, mm-hmm. and He will supply the energy to continue on in something that He has called me in. So it's okay, dear listener, to let some things go if you're just not convinced that this is God's calling on your life. Maybe it was someone else's calling for your life.
Yeah.
You stepped into that because there was a need, but there's someone that will take that spot and they will do it and they have the gifting for it. So I think this is just an encouragement to, you know, maybe step back, reevaluate what your gifts are, and then enter into your calling.
So good. You know, so many times, Donna, people ask me even like, what's next, Dawn? What's next, right? And I have learned in my obedience to this is that I don't know. Because until the Lord shows me in that Psalm 119 again, right, 105, until that light is on the path, I don't know. I look at everything I do as workplace ministry. And so if I'm on an assignment and God has called me onto an assignment and I am called to be there, then He equips the called. He doesn't call the equipped. That's where we get messed up, right? We think we're so equipped that we should go do it. And you said it so perfectly. It might be someone else's calling. I might be equipped and I'm doing someone else's calling. He's going to call me and now He's going to equip me. And when He equips me for my assignment, I have all the tools and resources because I'm plugged into the ultimate source. And when I'm plugged into Him, I don't need anything else. He is going to give me every single thing every day of what I need. He tells us in Matthew not to worry. He says, don't worry about the things of tomorrow. Don't worry about what you're going to eat. Don't worry about how you're going to clothe yourself and all of those things. Because when we're in His will, which means we're in our calling, He's gonna give it and provide as the great source.
He really is. Now, you have a very interesting thought, fail forward. You say that failure is not sin or something to fear. It's a learning tool that brings us closer to success. Now,
this is probably my favorite chapter of the book because it was the hardest for me to learn. And so then when I learned it, it was so freeing. It's like shackles came off of me. And the main reason, I was with a group of leaders recently and I asked them like, how do you feel when you have a failing moment, when you fail at something, how do you feel? And words like you just described, shame comes into play. Inadequate, you know, that imposter syndrome will show up again. And I knew for me, the big fear of failure that started to creep into my life was because of shame. And boy, today with social media, when someone fails, we just shame them to death on social, right? And so it is escalated even more. And so what I started to do is just reframe it. If I could reframe it, and the only reason I could reframe it is that I stopped long enough to have conversations with successful, and I should say highly effective people, people I admired and respected. And I was like, tell me how you got where you are. I know you had to overcome things. Nobody just arrives of where they are in their life today. Tell me how you overcame things. And what I realized in those discussions is that what they started to tell me was all the failures in their life. It was all of these failing moments that they used to learn from. And so I was like, well, how do you do that? Like, how do I shove the shame down? Or how do I say, okay, I'm not going to feel the shame because it creeps up. I don't want to feel that way, yet it cripples me in those failing moments. And so in reframing it, I've now got an acronym that I like to use for the word fail. And the very first one is that forgive, because like I say in the book, it's not a sin. It's like we have to forgive ourselves because we make it feel like a sin. We make it feel like we've done something so bad. And even if our failure is a sin, like we've done something that would be sinful, we can forgive. And we know that we're forgiven from our Heavenly Father, yet sometimes we don't forgive ourselves. And so the very first step is to forgive. And then that allows us to go to the A in the word fail and accept it. I have to accept it. can't shove it under a rug and make it become a tripping hazard. I can't blame it away. I can't, you know, just pretend it never happened. I have to accept it so that I can now do what the I stands for and fail is inspect it. Because inspecting it will let me recognize patterns. I know now in my life, if I'm hangry, if I'm tired, if I am made too many decisions in a day, so I have decision fatigue, there's a good chance. The probability is I'm about to hit a failing moment. I'm going to do something that's going to leave me feeling like I have failed, right? And so now through inspecting all of these moments, I can put some healthy boundaries and protection around myself. Yet I will still fail in some situations, but I can constantly do what the L stands for and fail now, learn from it. And the fail forward part is learning and changing our behaviors and patterns so that we can be different, right? And not the, we're failures when we repeat the same failing moment over and over again. And no one, none of our listeners are failures, because we can just use these failing moments as learning stepping stones and actually to launch us into our success. And so by accepting that, it almost be, it's freeing, yet sometimes I want to wake up in the morning like, okay, what's the failing opportunity today? Because I want to succeed big, right? Help me fail, Lord. Today, let's make it a failing day. You know, we don't do that, and nobody really wants to walk into that. But theoretically, if that's the secret sauce, right, and to becoming our best version of ourselves, we would wake up every day and welcome it.
Great encouragement from Dawn Kesdasu. She is the author of Trailer Park CEO, 12 Leadership Cornerstones to Become a Godly Woman of Influence, published by Broad Street Publishing. Thank you so much, Dawn, for taking time out of your busy schedule and being a part of Mark and Friends.
Oh, it's truly my pleasure and honor to be here today.
And thank you, dear listener, for listening to Mark and Friends. Don't forget all of the Mark and Friends program. They sit on our website in an MP3 format that's easy to download. Anytime you'd like to hear this program again, or maybe you've missed the Mark and Friends program, or would like to share it with a friend, it's so easy to do. Go to our website, find the Mark and Friends tab, and then download the program. We appreciate you. We understand that you have so many things you could be doing, but you're choosing to spend your time with us on Mark and Friends. Mark and Friends is a ministry of Great News Media. I'm your host, Donna Leland. Tomorrow, Mark and his studio friends will be sharing thoughts with you from Pastor Mark Johnson as they again look into God's Word. That's coming up tomorrow on Mark and Friends on Great News Media. Have a great day.